Name the talk slightly, out of deference to my colleagues, perhaps, but I'd like to look at a particular region in the southeast U.S. and look at some nitrogen cycles. Mainly, I'd like to look at three systems that most of us have some familiarity with. Old field successional pine that now cover tens of millions of hectares of the southeast, almost entirely an agricultural legacy. More industrial wood is harvested from this forest than any other regional wood basket in the world. Preceding that, on the same land base, was the Old South cotton, which many of us know at least a little bit about. Spanned 150 years or so, and through much of that time provided the emerging country of the United States with its agricultural engine. And then before that, an entirely different universe, Mississippian maize, a universe that's almost extinguished, except for bare remnants of writings. a few people still are in existence, and in deference to the other centers of the world agriculture, I remember reading 1989 Science Magazine. Smith wrote a piece in which Eastern North America, including the Southeast, was one of his four centers of world agriculture, distinguishing it from Mesoamerica to the south. So I'd like to look at the nitrogen cycle in those ecosystems. And our objective in looking at these three systems is to look at an idea that's been around for quite a while. Maybe it can be reduced to nitrogen deficiency, but Dale Johnson wrote a nice review in Ecology and named a phenomenon, progressive nitrogen limitation. I'll try not to abbreviate it too many times, PLN, progressive nitrogen limitation, which is a decadal accumulation of imbalance in the ecosystem nitrogen cycle. Basically, it's a quantitative approach to fertility here. We're accounting in a budgetary form nitrogen removals and their pace with nitrogen resupply over the decades, depleting mineralizable soil N. So I have a few hypotheses. This paper will go into Environmental History, a journal, very interesting journal. I remember I wrote a paper there once and the historians complained about a glut of data. Well, I don't know what they'll say about hypotheses, but in any event, net primary productivity, that's the productivity of plants, in the pine, in the cotton, and in the maize ecosystems alike are susceptible to this thing that Dale Johnson calls progressive nitrogen limitation. And the rates of that deficiency that develop are dependent on the dynamics of soil removals and nitrogen inputs, plus nitrogen that's recycled, particularly in forests, but also in the agroecosystems. And not least is that the contemporary pine system is greatly dependent on the previous history of nitrogen cycling across this vast region. So let's start with the system that we actually have data for, the pine ecosystem. And I've inherited a 50-year-old long-term pine system planted in pine 50 years ago by Carol Wells and Lou Metz. And they started to sample 16 permanent plots in 1962, and we've repeated those samples since then. But in any event, if one looks across the region, one can see that the forest has really amazingly grown in the latter 50 years of the 20th century. And this regional expansion of forest has strongly influenced the regional nitrogen cycle. So in brief, we can look at this Wells and Metz study and see the region in at least some of its parts. And the growth of this old field, long-term site, this pine field that in 1958 was just a year or two out of cotton, The growth of biomass and the large forest floor has transferred enormous amounts of nitrogen out of the mineral soil. So Wells and to some extent Metz's idea was to look at the way that the forest revegetation will alter the nutrient fertility through time. And here's a simple box diagram in which the growth of a pine forest can be summarized in three boxes, or at least the nitrogen in the pine forest as it grows and develops can be summarized in three boxes. So step number one is that mineral soil meets immediate vegetation needs for N. And a set of processes too include the buildup of the forest floor or the slow to decompose materials of the forest floor. And third is that organic matter recycling N as the system ages. And the point of the matter is to quantify the rates. And so in the 40-year data from the Calhoun long-term study, we can look at how much nitrogen is in the pine trees, 350, 360 kilograms per hectare, quite a bit. There's been a lot of litter fall, leaf fall, needle fall into the forest floor. There's even more nitrogen there. So what we have is a removal, a transfer rate of about 20 kilograms per hectare per year into these new components of the ecosystem. And perhaps it's not too surprising that this formerly fertilized cotton field soil has lost quite significantly almost the same amount of N that can be accounted for in the vegetation in the forest floor. I put down here CVs of eight of the permanent plots. We have 16, and what is really a tribute to Wells is the statistical rigor of this field study. Among the plots of vegetation and forest floor have CVs of less than 10% in that estimate. And the mineral soil in 1962 and in 1997, the 7-3 sampling, the CVs of the top 60 centimeters of soil are less than 20%. All due to the protocols of Carol and Lou. So here's progressive nitrogen deficiency that's developed under the pine forest. And here are the samples through as the forest has grown, the samples of the four layers translated into the metric system here. And all four layers, even the deeper subsoil, even the upper part of the B horizon, have lost a lot of nitrogen as the forest has grown. In fact, what's quite interesting and I think important is that out of the total soil organic nitrogen, 30% has been able to be mineralized and transferred into the above ground biomass and forest floor. Another interesting thing is the C to N ratio. So the quality of the organic matter has really shifted through time. And the canopy leaf area index, the foliage, we can judge the nitrogen status of the system. And if you're not a forester, that's a pretty low leaf area index for a pine forest. And similarly, if you know much about pine nutrition, 1.06 nitrogen in the species of pine, lobelia pine, is extremely low. So what's happened is the forest has grown itself into an acute nitrogen deficiency. Quite interesting. And the rates of this deficiency during the pine growth are basically due to the dynamics of biomass uptake, detrital accrual and decomposition, and also the legacies of cotton fertilization, which at the beginning of the forest, the soil organic nitrogen was actually quite mineralizable. We can see the legacies of agriculture prominently in the stable isotope of N15. So here we've taken Lou and Carol's samples through time and estimated the stable N15 concentration. So when trees grow and when microbes mineralize soil organic matter, they preferentially cycle 14. And so what is happening here is the gradual enrichment of 15 in the soil organic nitrogen left behind. So here in the first, in the agricultural soil system, so to speak, you had a pretty 14 was quite enriched relative to 15. But as the soil, mineral soil organic matter has been utilized through time, not only is the 15 enriched, but we have this very prominent, very common depth dependence established within 40 years. So in most soils, that depth dependence is quite prominent. That's really quite a shift of isotopes through the decades. So to move into this former cotton system, we can go to another long-term system, the old rotation experiment at Auburn University. It dates from the 1890s and has continued through time. And that shows yields that can be expected under different regimes, even a minus nitrogen regime here, kicking along at 500 kilograms per hectare of seed cotton. Basically, that's the nitrogen that's being accumulated in that harvest is what's coming out of atmospheric deposition, maybe a minor amount of fixation. But then you can see very prominent nitrogen responses that are demonstrated here with two different legume systems, soybeans and then a winter vetch. Very prominent nitrogen responsive crop. And after World War I, across this region, cotton became dependent on fertilizer N. And even in these systems that were, whether they were big systems or small farmer systems of tenant farmers or sharecroppers, even if these farmers were in debt, they were purchasing fertilizer. Now that was after World War I. Before World War I, before the Haber-Bosch process, the cotton was a very extensive crop across the South, and there was not a lot of nitrogen being spread pre-1860. And what's interesting is if you look at the maps that somebody like E.W. Hilgard might have looked at, you can see the physiographic provinces of the Southeast well displayed by the productivity of individual counties. Here's the Great Black Belt of Alabama and Mississippi, and of course the alluvial delta lands of Mississippi. So maybe not surprising that these were the lands that could support the mineralization of soil organic matter. And so what we can do is we can look at these pre-fertilization systems and make estimates of the different inputs of nitrogen and removals of nitrogen. And so what we've done is we've gone about and said, what are the processes that contribute inputs of nitrogen into these agroecosystems, and what are involved in the removals? And we've made ranges of estimates. So minimum estimates and maximum estimates. These were pretty exploitive systems. Removals many-fold higher than inputs. Well, that's not too surprising. That's pre-fertilization. You can see here the pine removal is 20 to 25 kilograms per hectare per year, just to remind you, and these systems are in that same ballpark, if not a little higher. And these can be substantiated to some extent by works like Gray's Agricultural History of the South, an amazing volume. He's suggesting that pre-Civil War, 5 to 10 years were maximum for cotton from fresh soil prior to shifting crops to, especially to wheat or just letting it go entirely. So we can think about progressive nitrogen limitation in these antebellum before Civil War cotton systems. And we've made some estimates, and here's where the historians might say, this is a glut of data. But we made some estimates of erosion, for example, 10 to 30 milligrams per hectare. We're not trying to push this too high either, but what if that material has 0.1% soil organic nitrogen? You know, there's the range of erosional loss. Leaching, 50 centimeters of water, it's a pretty humid environment. Let's say it has, 1 milligram of nitrogen as nitrate nitrogen per liter. And so we have a minimum and a maximum set of estimates. Similarly with harvest. And so we can take the same approach to conclude with the southeastern maize system that Smith referred to as one of the four centers of world agriculture. Surely that must be contentious. But in any event, these were amazing systems and entirely extinguished. We see villages here, 1590, here's an interesting person scaring the birds away from the local cornfields. A little tobacco here in this. The granaries that DeSoto describes, the granaries were enormous that were filled with cotton. It was a very productive system. And so if you go to anthropologists and archaeologists, one can conclude these are based almost entirely on bottomlands, alluvial soils. They span from about 800 to 1500 AD, supported up to 2 million people across the southeastern region. And these were, to some extent, shifting fields, but also with legumes in them. So if one takes the same kind of approach and makes estimates of minimum and maximum inputs of nitrogen and removals, one can see it's much more interesting than the antebellum cotton without much input here. But even still, it's a nitrogen cycle running in deficit. Here the inputs include not only nitrogen fixation from legumes that were an important part of the domesticated crops, but also sediment deposition. So what I've tried not to do here is overestimate the removals, but give some benefit to the system so that we don't overemphasize the exploitive nature. But in any event, it's a system that is running in deficit, therefore requiring fallows periodically. And so across a wide range of ecosystems and technologies in the U.S. South, this idea of progressive nitrogen limitation of an ecosystem seems to be a common outcome of many managed soils. And just as a way to think about something a little bigger, as we move to a world without fresh soil, we're challenged to better quantify not only the nitrogen cycle, but the technical basis for how an ecosystem does become limited by N. So thank you.
There's time for a couple of questions. Are there questions?
Yep. Dan, is there any way to parse the trajectory of this progressive N limitation in the Mississippi maize stage? Looking for cobs or?
Yeah. I wish I knew more of what the archaeologists know about this, but quite a bit is known among archaeologists, and you might say yes, even at UNC, right, 15 minutes from where I live, I should get to know those people much more. They've done 100 years of work in these Mississippian villages. No, I can't answer your question though. Yeah, Mary Beth. So I think across the broad region they're pine forests are notably strong nitrogen sinks. Others measure nitrate in rainfall and throughfall and in O-horizon water. The water you get under just a small layer of pine needles is almost completely the detection limit of nitrate and ammonium is attained. These systems the requirement for nitrogen is large, especially in their aggregating phase of the first few decades. So I think the question is over the decades, nitrogen could accrue if they're managed and harvest products are removed. That will that'll be a consideration as well. Yeah?
I just had a comment. I'm both an archaeologist and a soil scientist.
Yes.
And I've done studies of Zuni farming in west central New Mexico. Mm-hmm. We've done cropping experiments. And in the southwest, we found no decline in nitrogen levels. Mm-hmm. But what they did is they carefully managed their fields by placing them down on alluvial fans where they're receiving sediments from the watershed. Mm-hmm. And we've also done a number of studies showing that comparing the Zuni blue corn against drought adapted hybrids, that the Zuni blue corn was much better adapted to mobilizing those elements, phosphorus and nitrogen, into the grain. Mm-hmm. And the grain also has higher concentrations of nitrogen and phosphorus. So, you know, there were centuries of knowledge, and we think that they did develop very highly sustainable systems in the southwest.
Yeah, I didn't want, in each of these budgets, I didn't want to overemphasize the removal rates. So I think I've been conservative. I love being a historian. I love the idea of being a historian because there's so much disciplinary subjectivity that's in play. And I'm not a romantic. And I find that, you know, there are probably alluvial bottoms that were incredibly nutrient rich and were able to be sustained much more than others. But I find it very interesting that legumes were part of the system.